Well, welcome to Crossroads. If you're newer today, you're probably going, what in the world have I stepped into? You stepped into something that was pretty awesome. We're going to be talking about today. Before we do, why don't you go ahead and shake somebody's hand, say hello to them, and go ahead and have a seat. Man, hey, let's thank the band. My goodness. They're playing so good and loud, they will melt your face off. That's one of Josh's favorite lines. Melt your face off. Yes. Wow, hey, this is, I believe, perhaps, the six most important weeks that you may encounter. I believe what's going to happen the next 6 weeks could change your heart. I believe the next 6 weeks, decades from now, there will be people in Cincinnati who will look back at the six-week period of people who are part of Crossroads. They said, that 6 weeks changed my life. It changed my neighborhood. It changed my city. That 6 weeks. I believe that there will be children who are hungry right now that will not be hungry, who decades from now will have a healthy, sufficient family, and they will say, everybody I know, their life is different because of what happened decades ago for 6 weeks. I believe that. I believe that decades from now, South African officials will see the medical plan that has been unleashed inside of the township of Mamelodi, and they will say what those Cincinnatians did for 6 weeks decades ago has changed our township and the permanent health of over a million of our citizens. I believe that decades from now, there will be a little girl who right now is in forced prostitution, who will have a child who will be 20, 30 years old, and they will tell the story of how their mom and her friends came to wholeness because of what happened in Cincinnati for a six-week period decades ago. And today, you may not believe that. You don't have to believe that. In fact, today, you don't have to agree with anything I say. You don't. This is the beginning of a journey. I don't expect you to come in with one opinion and all of a sudden have a different opinion. I don't expect you to come in with certain habits and all of a sudden have different habits. Today, we are just starting a journey, a six-week journey that is going to take us to a place where all of us can determine, God, what would you want me to do financially above and beyond what I currently give for 3 years to go after these initiatives? And so today, I just want to explain it a little bit. I want to remove some barriers. I want to give us a little push to go forward. One of the things that we've been doing in this campaign is having documentary viewings. There's a documentary of the history of Crossroads and where we're going. I'm going to talk about it later on. If you haven't had a chance to see it yet, everyone's going to be able to see it. And one woman who saw the documentary recently had some profound thoughts that went through her brain. And we're going to share a bit of her story. While we take a look at her story, we're also going to have greeters, welcomers, volunteers, whatever we call them. My mind's a little bit frazzled right now. I've been on so much testosterone, I can't even stand it today. We're going to come down with little discs and pass some discs. If you're newer here today, we don't expect you to give it all. In fact, if you're newer today, we expect you to be freaked out right now. Yes, we do. Let that bag just pass you by. But for those of us who call this place home, we have a context for why we give and are generous. This is how we fuel life change in here and all over the globe. As we sit here today, Crossroads is at a crossroads. Crossroads is at a crossroads in that we are in a place where we don't have to go to the right or to the left. We are at a place where we don't have to go left or right. We could stay right where we are. That's what happens when you're at a crossroads. You don't have to go left. And really, Crossroads right now, we don't have to do anything. We're all nice and happy, fat, dumb, and happy. Got our free coffee, got our nice seats. We got good, cool things we can show in the video, make ourselves feel good about the things that we're doing. There's no groundswell of people who are in our midst going, man, we need to do something uncomfortable. We need to do something different. And that's part of why we're at a crossroads. But nonetheless, there are two streets that are intersecting that are asking us whether or not we will go forward or we will get stagnant. The one street is the street of the spiritual, the spiritual. The spiritual is that there is a healthy thing that happens when you talk about money. Jesus talked more about money than he did about anything else. If you like Jesus, You like his ideas of love and everything, you have to like the fact that he talked about money. He talked more about money than he talked about love. He talked more about money than he talked about heaven. Talked more about money than he talked about anything else. Why is that? It's because money is the chief competitor for our affections against God. Money wants to be for us what only God can be for us. And when you start poking at money, you really start poking at what we really love and what our heart's about. So the healthiest thing for us as a church right now could be to go through a six-week journey where we wrestle with the spiritual power of money. The second avenue is the avenue of financial. There are things that God has called us to that prayer is not going to take us to the next place. Hey, I love prayer. I'm pro-prayer. Keep praying. Love that. There's things that God is calling us to that volunteering is not going to take us to the next place. I love volunteering. I love that we all volunteer. That's one of our strong marks. But volunteering is not going to take us to where we go. The key barrier we have is there is an infusion of cash that needs to come with the initiatives that God's calling us to. So with these two crosshairs, we're at a crossroads about whether we will go forward or not. One of the reasons why this is called the Game Change Campaign actually traces to an article in the New Yorker several months ago by Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm Gladwell wrote The Tipping Point, the book Blink, a really innovative thinker and a really great writer. And in this article, he talked about when, quote, David's beat Goliath. And he talks about how in history, the little guy often does beat the big guy, but it's when the little guy uses different weapons, uses different methods. And so his example was how a girls' junior high team that had the worst athletes in the league actually employed different methods, and they employed a full court press the entire game, and all the coaches got upset because that's not the way you're supposed to play the game. You're supposed to wait until you're behind. If you're behind, then you employ the full court press. And the coach said, well, why would I go by those rules? I'm going to change the unwritten rules of the game and do a full court press the entire game and went all the way to the state finals that way. This is really how God operates. This is part of what's in the story of David and Goliath that we're going to spend the rest of our time looking at. That underdogs, the little guy, actually can do big things if they take a different attitude, if they change the game. This book is all about God changing the game. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is when God says, your ways are not my ways. Your ideas of how you go forward, your ideas of a good life, your idea of success, God says, is not my ideas. I have different ways than your standard operating principles. God also wants to structure the nation of Israel in a different way. He wants to change the game as how nations are structured by not establishing a strong king figure. The nation of Israel in their early days of infancy starts looking around at other nations and says, gosh, everybody else has a king. We want a king. Can I have a king? And apparently, God is flexible and he's not ready to die on this hill. So God says, all right. Actually, a fascinating character study on God. How he actually, from time to time, actually changes his mind on things. So he says, I really prefer that not to be the case. But okay, all right, that's fine. You can have a king. So they have this king. Who is a kingly king? If you're going to have a king, let's have a kingly king. They get Saul, who is a head taller than anybody else in the nation of Israel. He is a manly man. He is a charismatic guy. He is strong. He is vibrant. He is virile, all that kind of stuff. And he has a good run, but then he starts to lose it. He starts to lose his heart towards other things. He starts to make bad decisions. And eventually, he becomes disqualified from leadership. And so God goes to the chief spiritual guru of the nation of Israel, Samuel, and says, Samuel, it's time for you to go get ready for Saul's successor. I need you to go get the next king. Go to the house of Jesse. So Samuel goes to Jesse, and he's got a bunch of sons. And Samuel is a little bit tied into the ways of the world as well. No matter how spiritual he is, he's tied into the ways of the world. And the ways of the world are the good-looking one, the big one, that's the one who you normally go with, the one who is charismatic, the one who is pleasant to look at. And so he sees the tallest and oldest son, and he thinks, certainly, this has to be the one. And God says to him this. He says, the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. God says, this isn't the one, Samuel, and you just got busted in terms of how the game is normally played. I'm not about outward physical appearance. I'm about inward purity, inward drive, inward connection to me. And this is still the way it is today. You ever notice how in politics, that the one who is the best looking or that has the outwardly best speech wins versus the one who has the best ideas and the best inner character? You're not going to find on the cover of many magazines somebody who just looks average or below average. We need the external great experience. How many newscasters do you know that just aren't very good looking? No, those ones go to radio. We don't want to actually look at them, you know? That's our society. No outward appearance. God says, I want the inside, what's on the inside. So God says to Samuel, it's not this one. So Samuel's in an attitude of prayer, starts looking at these different sons, and says, is there none left? And they say, well, there's one more. It's the youngest one. He's out tending sheep. And because he's tending sheep, this is a sign that he's actually the least valuable. He's the one that is the least esteemed because sheep are dirty, disgusting creatures, and we'll stick him over there with the sheep. So Samuel goes to check him out, and sure enough, he senses from God, this is the one. So he anoints David as a little shepherd boy that he is to be the next king of Israel. And there's now this in-between period, this period where Saul really doesn't know that his run is done. David understands he has a future, and David is kind of having the foot in both camps. He's working with his dad, doing the sheep, and he's also going from time to time to the front lines of Israel, helping the armies out in secondary and behind-the-scenes ways. So while he's going back and forth in this period, he comes back to the nation of Israel, who was in a stalemate. He just noticed they're stalemated against their arch enemies, the Philistines. Israel is up on one hillside. The Philistines are up on another hillside, and nobody wants to make the first move because to make the first move means you would charge down the hillside, you'd be in the valley, and then the opposing army has the high ground and they can beat you back easy. They can send arrows down and everything. So no one wants to make that first move because whoever does is initially in the worst position. So therefore, they're stalemated. And in this stalemate, the ultimate fighting champion of the Philistines, Goliath, he's a freak of nature, comes forward and says to the nation of Israel, who wants me? Anybody? Here I am. You send your best fighter. Here I am. We'll decide right now whose army is more victorious. Here I am. This guy's a freak of nature. He's 9 feet tall. He's 650 pounds. He's armored head to toe. He's got a sword. He's got a spear for medium range fighting. He's got a javelin for long distance. And he comes out twice a day for 40 days asking who in Israel will take him on. David stumbles upon this at about day 40 or so. He stumbles upon this and he's going, is nobody stepping up? Why is nobody handling this? See, the nation of Israel, these people who are just watching this, they know they got a big problem, but they assume this big problem will take care of itself. Let me tell you something about your life. When you have a big problem, it will not just go away. Goliath is not going away. They think if they just ignore it, wait on it, he will not go away. When you have a big problem in your life, you must deal with it. It will not go away. I meet people all the time. Marriages are tanking. I go, but not trying anything different. Just assuming it'll get better. No, you got a big problem, you make it. I know people who they hate going to their mailbox because they're in such credit card debt, they can't handle taking a look at those minimum payments. Big problem. Just ignoring it, not going to make it go away. You're going to have to do something. You might have to eat oatmeal for 6 months, honestly. When you have a big problem, when you're hurting physically, when stuff's going on, just assuming you're going to get better, no. You're going to have to change something to get rid of the big problem. Nobody is willing to address Goliath, and I'm asking you, if you're part of Crossroads, to address the Goliaths that are staring us down. And not to assume that if I just wait or ignore it, it will get better. It will not. David notices this, and he decides that he is going to be the one to engage. And when he decides this, nobody takes him seriously. If you think about David's, when you were a David, you were small and nobody takes you seriously. David's are small and are not taken seriously. David takes a look at this situation, and he decides that he'll answer Goliath's challenge. And his brother and King Saul don't take him seriously. Look what happens. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, You've come down to see the battle. You're a slacker. You're just trying to take the day off. You can't do anything. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you're but a youth, and he's been a man of war from his youth. You're new to this game, and he's been in the fight game since he was your age and younger. Nobody takes David seriously. Now, here's the thing that most of us may not believe. When I read this story, we are David in this story. We are not Goliath. We are David. Most people view Crossroads as a Goliath. And if you're viewing us through the lenses of churches, yes, we are a Goliath, huge, thankfully ever-growing church, yes. But we have never compared ourselves or taken our cues from the standards of churches. We love all different churches. God uses all different kinds of churches. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But we've never measured ourselves against other churches. We measure ourselves about the concepts that are in the Bible. We measure ourselves against God's standard of the kingdom of God. We don't view ourselves in relationship or competition to other churches. Our issues that we're going after are Goliath. It is a Goliath issue that hundreds of thousands of people in the city of Cincinnati really could not articulate what the cross means. They know it hangs on a wall, but they really could not articulate that is the proof of God's love. My sins were put on that, and that shows me how valuable I am, that God paid himself for me, and all my problems are nothing because I am of value. It is a problem that hundreds of thousands of people in Cincinnati really don't know that there is a Holy Spirit that does indwell you, not the Spirit, the Spirit that does indwell you and gives you powers and abilities beyond what you can humanly have. It's a problem. Hundreds of thousands of folks have not encountered the Creator who's created them in His image. That's a major problem, major. Crosses 14,000 people a weekend, big freaking deal. Hundreds of thousands of people are nowhere near a church that speaks their dialect and can connect them to their Creator. That's a problem. It's a major problem that we're in a city that is racked with poverty. Major problem. Major problem that there are kids that are hungry in our city. Major problem that generation after generation has never had a role model where they can see somebody who gets an education, who gets a job, who furthers themselves, that the systems that come against poverty don't help that holistically. That is a Goliath problem. 22% of our city is at or beneath the poverty line. It's a Goliath problem that our friends over in South Africa don't have adequate medical care, that can die if they have a broken arm because they can't get to a doc. And if they could physically get there, they'll never get in. That's a Goliath problem. It's a Goliath problem that the city of Cincinnati that was at the fulcrum point of the slavery issue during the Civil War. We were at the crossroads of the slavery issue. It's a Goliath issue that we, as a David, can go to the crosshairs of the sexual slavery industry in India. That is a Goliath problem that we are a David in going against. And when Crossroads starts speaking these issues or trying different things, you know, we're never taken seriously. Oh, you still your churchy thing, you know, yeah. Because Davids are never initially taken seriously because they do different things, because they're a new player on the scene. David is not just bold, but he also is bold because of his relationship with God. David's strength is in God's identity. David's are not about propagating their own brand for their own props. David's aren't about their own personal bottom line. They're about God's identity. Look what David says as he's getting all this grief from people who don't believe in him. He says this, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. David says, my strength doesn't come from my abilities. It doesn't come from my physical appearance. My strength comes from God. And I've seen what God's done in my midst before. I've seen God deliver me against the bear, against the lion. I've been doing my duty, standing my watch as a shepherd boy. And that same God that gave me the ability to sling a stone with amazing accuracy, that same God that has given me courage, that same God will help me against another mere human being. He is confident in God's identity and that what pushes him forward. We're not confident in Crossroads history. We're confident in the God that is actually in these pages and throughout history has changed history. And that God still moves through teams of people, through churches who are fully committed. The Davids of this world, the Davids of the kingdom, the David in this story also uses different weapons. Davids use different weapons. Saul comes to David and he says, okay, well, you got a history of battle against beasts. That's fine. I'll let you do it. And Saul, out of the best intentions of his heart, gives him the best weapons that Saul knows of, his own. He gives him his sword, which would have been the best sword in the land, would have been the most finely crafted, likely the sharpest sword in the land. He puts his armor on him, would have been the best armor, would have been the strongest armor, would have been the lightest armor, as only the king would have. And he puts these weapons, these methods on David, and he's going, this just doesn't fit me. This is not tested. This is not who I am. So he takes it off. He changes the game by changing the weapons. He goes and he uses his sling. He uses his slingshot. It's not this like little thing you see in cartoons where, get my little slingshot, boom. This would have been a piece of leather with a couple long strands of leather. And he says, man, I've been using this a lot. I use this when I'm passing time watching the sheep. I use this to fend off animals. Now, I'm going to use a different weapon. And this is scandalous. You can't go to battle with a different weapon. This is the way it works. Let me tell you, one of the reasons why there is not leap changes in our society is because we're afraid to use different weapons. Incremental improvement of processes will not change any game. Trying the same old things, even with more energy and with different people, will not change. In our city, there is $1.4 billion every year spent on poverty. $1.4 billion, not million, billion dollars. Actually, it's anywhere from $1 billion to $2 billion. And the needle doesn't change ever in terms of the poverty rate. And so working harder and all the organizations that are doing as best as they can, and God bless every organization, every person who's engaging in our city, wonderful, wonderful. But to have change, there must be a different weapon. And every time there's been change in our society, it's always been because of David said, I'm going to try something different. I've got a Bible right here that I've been reading from. And now, this looks like, oh, this is just a normal tool. Like now, the next revolution, the game change is obviously electronic media versus actual paper. But there was a day when this was a game change. This was a new weapon. Gutenberg came out with a printing press. And many people said, man, let's just start printing out Bibles. How awesome that is, that we can get the Word of God in people's hands. And the purists thought, you can't do that. No, 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 no. People need to go to where a trained clergy member is to tell them what the Word of God means. You can't just give a Bible to somebody. It was scandalous. And other people said, no, man, if I'm going to read something, I need a hand drawn out by a scribe. This is obvious and has changed the game, but initially it was a weapon, the printing press, that was very controversial and nobody took seriously as actually being a tool that could change things. Most of us drove here in a car. You drove here in a car. You're able to drive in here in a car because Henry Ford changed the game. He used a different weapon. He invented the assembly line. Up to that, the whole process was have a craftsman who goes from soup to nuts, does everything, doing the whole thing, working it through. And Henry Ford said, that's too expensive. You can't do that handcrafted car all the way through. In fact, even today it is. Even today it is. That's why very few of us have a Rolls Royce. By the way, if anybody in here does have a Rolls Royce or a Bentley, boy, I'd love to have lunch with you. I would. I would love to challenge you to write the biggest check of your life for something other than you sit in. By the way, honestly, I'm not cracking on any of us here who may have those kind of resources. Awesome, but hey, it's a new day coming for you and for all of us in here. But here's the deal. Henry Ford changed the game because he said, okay, you're just going to take this bolt here, you're going to go here and this. All you're going to do, bolt here, that. All you're gonna do is that. And you're gonna take this tire, this rim, and go, boom, that's all you're gonna do. And you're gonna come back here and you go, boom. And the revolutionary approach of the assembly line, this different weapon, altered the transportation industry permanently. He changed the game. And now it's, oh, well, yeah, I guess so. Who doesn't do assembly lines? Every new frontier is started by a David who has the boldness to do a new weapon and try something different. Here's the weapons that we're going to be using, three of these weapons. Number one, we're going to be using a thermostat instead of a thermometer. Campaigns, nonprofit organizations, they love thermometers. Thermometers sit on stages, they go in newsletters. You will not see a thermometer. We're saying, let's reach our goal. You know, thermometers, that's not what we're going to do. We're going to do a thermostat. The reason why Jesus talked more about money than anything else is he knew it was a central spiritual issue. And if you want to dial up your spiritual intensity, if you want to understand more of the character of God, if you want to come to a fever love for God, there's no better place to start than with your giving. There's no better place to start than with your money. If I want to know what's important to you, I don't need to look at your calendar. I don't want to hear what you believe. I don't want to look at your Bible reading schedule. I want to look at what you spend your money on. Period, that says it. Whatever you prioritize financially, that's what's most important to you. Jesus put it this way. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart is also. What he's saying here is not just our spending dictates where our heart is, but our spending leads to where our heart will go. Money is like a rock that is tied on a long tether and attached to our heart. And wherever you throw your money around, that's where your heart's going to go. So you throw your money over that, you're going to go that way. You throw your money at P&G stock, I got to watch and see what that's doing. I got to go there. Wherever you throw your money, your heart will go. I see these statistics every once in a while. They're sort of depressing. It was in the Wall Street Journal this last week about the cost it takes to raise a kid from 0 to 18. $222,000 freaking dollars. $222,000. More or less, depending on what your household income is. Now, if you don't have kids and don't really want a kid, you're really like going, that's exactly why I don't want to have kids. That is redonkulous. No way, because you're going, that is crazy. That's crazy. No way. Those of us who have kids, we're initially going, oh, really? And then we start going, oh, yeah, what I was thinking. The shoes, the food, the braces, the movie ticket, the car insurance. Oh, crap. Car insurance. That's probably about right. And it doesn't really bother us that much. Why? Because we love our kids so much because we've been throwing money at them. Because where your money goes, your heart is going there. In fact, some of us in here dealing with infertility, isn't this true? Those of us who are unfortunately dealing with infertility, as soon as you start the infertility treatments, you want a kid worse than ever, ever. It's not because you want to get rid of this in the in vitro cost, but something happens in the spiritual world as you're throwing money. All of a sudden, you are dying more than ever. It's because what Jesus says, where your money goes, there is your heart going to go as well. And we are all having a gift of 6 weeks. For 6 weeks, you are going to have a thermostat that's going to increase your passion. I believe you're going to see things about God you never saw before. I believe you're going to feel God in ways you never felt before. I believe you're going to understand the spirit world in ways which you never could have understood. And you are going to be so thankful for the 6 weeks. Paul Brown, the father who knew something about football, knew about football, and he would tell his athletes going into a 6 week training camp. He said this. In what other business can a man discover in 6 weeks what he's made of? What other business? To be clear, at the end of 6 weeks, there will be a thermometer stuck up our rectum. No question. We will find out in 6 weeks what we're made of. But the thermometer is not going to drive us, but we will have a reading on how hot we are for Jesus. We will. We will have a reading whether or not we're becoming comfortable as a large thing or whether or not we're wanting to go further. We're using the different method, the different weapon of a thermostat. Second thing we're going to use, we are using the different weapon of being team players instead of bystanders. It's very common in America for everybody to assume the government ought to do that. The big, rich, fat cats ought to do that. The foundations ought to do that. Somebody knows what they're doing ought to do that. It's just common to point the finger and wonder why else. Read a blog sometime. My goodness. It is very common for that. But the weapon we're using is, hey, all of us are part of a team. We are all going to be a team player. We are all going to a new place. We all get to engage and be a part of something God is doing. And I just ask you as a teammate, are you a teammate or are you a bystander? Are you bothered that people do not know Jesus? Does that bother you? Not like, oh, everyone's got their own spiritual opinions. And I know inside of here, we all have different spiritual opinions. That's what I love about CrossFit. But I'm asking you, if you actually believe the Bible and believe the God that's actually saved you, does it bother you that people face the crisis eternity? Or are you just like, oh, well, I guess someone's got to do it. Does it bother you? Does it bother you that there are kids in our city that are hungry? Does it bother you? There's a whole class of people in our city that have never known anything other than poverty and will never know anything unless a different weapon comes. Does it bother you? These are your fellow citizens. Does that bother you? Does it bother you that people die in Mamelodi of basic care they get walking in any medical clinic in Cincinnati? Does that bother you? You say, well, gosh, you know, I hope Bono does something over there, whatever he's doing, or as a bystander. Does it bother you that there are girls who are under our watch who've been kidnapped or sold into slavery who give every month 300 to 400 blowjobs, forced? And does it bother you more that I said blowjob than that actually happens? Seriously, we're rattling our cages and trying to say, no, man, this typical American life, I just consume my own thing, I'm doing this and that. That ends for our next six-week journey, our third and final weapon I want to call out today is we are using the weapon of full engagement instead of the weapon of fair share. Not the weapon of fair share. You're never going to hear fair share, and you're never going to see anything that is like fair share. Take a nice breath. This should cause your butt to unpucker right now. Some of you, like, you've just been like, I should say, you should go, oh, okay, good. Unpucker yourself. Just let me tell you, I've talked with a lot of people who've been other organizations, spiritual organizations, churches, or whatever, who come here beat up and talk. One guy came from a synagogue, came to know Christ here, and he told me that, you know, in that religious organization, they told them at the beginning of a campaign, in our next building, if you want to sit in the front row, the cost is this. If you want to sit in the second row, the cost is that. If you want to sit in the third row, the cost is that. I know other folks from other churches have gotten letters in the mail saying, your expected contribution is this. You will never get a phone call from anybody at CrossFit telling you what you're expected to give. You will never get a letter with some number stuck in it. That is fair share. We're trying to all fully engage in a spiritual journey, by the way. This is also right now why I'm intentionally being nebulous about money. Well, you're going, how much? Come on, what are you talking about? What's the goal? First of all, it's not a tangible goal because that's what thermometers are about. But secondly, as soon as we will get into numbers. We will get into numbers in different aspects of our campaign. The weeks go on. As soon as we give a number, here's the way the game is played. Oh, that's the number? How many people say come to CrossFit? Men, women, and child? 14,000 or so? Okay. So that's the number divided by 14,000 equals my voila fair share number. And as soon as that happens, everybody loses. Those of us in here who are lower income will look at that number and go, see, I'm just not important at CrossFit. I'm not really important here. This is for a church for people who can really do something more than me. I'm just a second class person. People who have more money will look at that and go, oh, is that what we're talking about? Oh, all right, I'm down with that. That's fine. And everybody loses because none of us go on a spiritual journey to hear what God wants of us. God asks different things from different people in different seasons. We're going to go through this spiritual journey, and we've done this before. I need it. The Tome family needs it again. It's a three-step process. Number one is surrender. It's to say, God, all the things that I have, all these things, I just want to bring them out of the, I want to bring them out of my pocket and just recognize to you that all of these things are yours. You gave me the abilities for all of these things. And I just want to bring them up on the table and just say, with all spiritual sanity, God, all these things are yours. I recognize it, and I just surrender to it. In a moment of spiritual clarity, I surrender and recognize that all of these are yours. Everything I have on the table and everything I'm going to get put on my table in the next 3 years, it's all yours. And the second step is this. God, is there any of these things that you want back? what here do you want to call dibs on? Or what are you going to put here ahead of time you're going to say is yours? Is this what you're at? Okay. Listen. What is it? How do I know what God wants me to do personally? And then the third step is going to be to do it. It's going to be able to mark down on a card, make a commitment, say, God, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I'm making that commitment. That's the process. That's all we're going to do. And I believe you're going to learn to hear from God in ways that you have not known before. I believe that you're going to have your heart, the crust that's around all of our hearts is going to fall off. I believe we're all going to get reoriented in amazing and powerful ways. Our country is all about forcing an agenda on us. And we're going to go on a journey that comes against the agenda. When the country's going great economically, the agenda is spend, upgrade, do more, have this. When things are bad, it's like, oh, be afraid, very afraid. Hoard, save, clamp down, don't share. It's all the same God of money that's still trying to dictate our attitudes instead of God dictating our attitudes. So David uses his weapons of rocks. Actually, he goes down to where the rocks are. It says he grabs five of them. He grabs five rocks. He puts them in his little pouch. We don't know exactly why he does five. He's just ready. He puts five in his pouch, and he goes down to meet Goliath. And as it says in the Bible, he doesn't just walk down to meet the Bible. It says that he runs, and it's a long run. He's got to run down the hill, picking up rocks perhaps as he goes, and he's running way out. While he is running, Goliath sees this little kid with no armor, no sword coming towards him, and he taunts the nation of Israel. He said, am I a dog? You bring little sticks to me? Who am I? Is there no real man? This is the best you have to offer? He's taunting, hurling insults at David, hurling insults at the very God of this nation. And David is this warrior just shows up. He just says, I'm in. Whatever you have, God, I'm just bringing who I am. And as the story goes, as he's running to Goliath, he pulls the stone out. He puts it in his thing, and he's, bam, he just nails this thing right in his head. He doesn't stop to pray about it. He doesn't stop to wonder, oh no. He just runs, and he shows up, bam. And as this thing goes, experts in these kind of weapons would say, in the hands of somebody who knows what he's doing, like somebody who's past time watching sheep, had nothing better to do other than practice on his slingshot, like somebody who that was their main mode of defense against wild animals, when you would take that leather pouch with those strings and twirl that and let one go at the right time, that rock could go 2,000 feet per second, and when it hit, it would have 5,000 foot-pounds of energy. It hits Goliath. We don't know if Goliath had a little slit in his thing and it hits him between the slit. We don't know if Goliath had taken off his helmet because it wasn't taken seriously. Even if he had his armor on, it would have pierced his armor. It sunk into his head, and he falls down dead. This guy who has been taunting David, devaluing God, not taking this seriously, is now dead. You can sense that our nation of Israel, everybody is like clamoring and shouting, and all of a sudden there's just a hush. The unthinkable has happened. The big problem is taken down by a David. Look what happens. David goes, he runs. He's still running. He's still running. David ran. He stood over the Philistine, took his Goliath sword, massive sword, larger than Saul's, drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. David comes straight to him. Massive sword, probably as big as he was. Kind of put just the weight of it alone. Boom! Takes off his head. Picks up the head. Turns back to his countrymen. He changes the game. All of a sudden, the nation of Israel takes off, and they run down, and they chase the Philistines back to Never Never Land because one guy decided to engage. I'm telling you right now, we are going to take the heads off of problems that are plaguing our city. We are going to take the head off of the medical problem in Mamala. We are going to take the head off of the issue of girls in hellish circumstances. And if you don't want to take heads off, this is the wrong church for you. If you want to play church, if you want to go someplace there's good music, nice videos, someplace to give you nice spiritual attitudes that you agree with, there's many other places you could go. This place isn't one of them. This place, this season, this time is for people who just want to show up. And so all I'm asking you today is to make the decision to show up for the next 6 weeks. I'm asking you to make it a priority to get here on the weekends. I'm asking you to make it more important than your camping trip, more important than a bike trip, more important than going to see Aunt Mildred, who you just saw 8 weeks ago. I'm asking you to make it a priority to show up and hear from God. I'm asking you, also, as you got one of these, this is a customized prayer journal for you. Every week we'll talk here from stage, and then there are exercises and additional thoughts and stories that you can do on your own in your private setting during the week. Engage this. I'm telling you, you have a gift. We are hand-delivering you a gift for your spiritual formation that you are going to be thankful for decades. Last thing I want to ask you of today, there'll be other things to ask, other opportunities will make you aware of, but the other one is that documentary that many of us have seen. We had a showing with a number of people and then gave DVDs for those folks, the seed group, to invite friends over their house. And so maybe you didn't get invited because you didn't know anybody who's kind of closer to the core around here, or maybe you got invited and you couldn't do it. But we want to make it available for every person. Every person here should see that documentary. How many of us have already seen it, by the way? Raise your hand if you've seen it. Look, claps have just started. How good was that documentary? How great, I'm telling you. It is 65 minutes of warmth and inspiration. It is 65 minutes of education. It is 65 minutes that are just phenomenal. This week, we're gonna make it easy for you. Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. Any night of the week this week, 7 o'clock, get here, and we are gonna have a full view. I'm gonna ask you to make that a priority. Do yourself a favor, bless yourself, get here. Or if you're up closer to the north side, Mason is also having a viewing at our Mason facility at 7 o'clock.